On this episode, we talk with our good friend Corey Martin about updates from jail ministry.
You're listening to the Dudes and Dads Podcast, a show dedicated to helping men be better dudes and dads by building community through meaningful conversation and storytelling. And now, here are your hosts, Joel DeMott and Andy Lehman.
Joel.
Andy. Wait, whoa.
I gotcha.
You did.
Hey, hi everybody. Hello. Andy, how are things?
Good. The fair's done.
Oh boy, isn't it though?
That was a long week.
A long week.
Good week, a bit long.
Andy, tell me about your favorite this year, favorite part of the fair, apart from it being done.
Well, my birthday always falls on fair week.
That's right.
And so I always get Netterman steak tips.
Mm-hmm. You got a whole pile, too.
It was good. They, like, yeah, piled them up today.
That's so nice. So you should have done a little winky wink, been like, hey, it's my birthday.
It's my birthday anymore.
It's my birthday. What's the birthday portion of Netterman steak tips?
They'd be like the same, just more.
Not a sponsor, but they could be. Netterman steak tips. Tips.
Wow, that's impressive. No, one of my other favorite parts, though, was the fact that so we were stalled right next to somebody that I knew followed the podcast.
Yes.
But I didn't believe we've never really met.
Yes.
Before. So Jordan and Krista Kearns, welcome.
Jordan and Krista. So, Andy, I have a confession to make about Jordan and Krista.
Okay.
Here it goes. So a few weeks ago, we had their mutual friends of ours were house sitting for Jordan and Krista. And I actually did contemplate bribing those house sitters to gain entry to their home to leave them a nice surprise. I didn't do it. I felt conflicted about if it was crossing a barrier, a boundary. But I was like, wouldn't it be great if I just convinced those lovely youngins to just let me just waltz right into their house. I don't know, maybe leave them a giant cardboard cutout of myself, like,
oh, yeah,
saying welcome home. Wouldn't that be exciting?
Hiding in their bathroom or something.
Yeah, exactly. That could be their shower. Oh gosh. Rip that shower curtain back. Terrifying.
But what was interesting is because, like, we had been like, we were right next to them all week in the barn.
Yeah.
And she saw me at the cafe.
You wore your dudes and dads,
I had my dudes
swag.
And dads shirt.
That's
and she's
right.
like, wait, you're and are you Andy, like,
here's
the podcast?
Here's
and I'm like,
people,
yes.
People ask me, what they just say is, are you dudes and dads?
Yeah, and that's how she said.
Yeah.
And then
that's, which is a strange question to answer.
Right. And so I'm like, yes.
Am I dudes and dads?
She told
There's
me
so much more to me, but she, thank you.
She told me that I should have said something to her earlier about it. I'm like, no. Like,
you should have said, I don't know if you know this, but I'm podcast famous. I don't mean to brag.
But anyways, it was nice to officially meet you guys. So.
Yeah, that's super cool. And we always love it, honestly, when people say hello. I had a similar experience a few weeks ago out at the baseball field where someone pointed, I was wearing my shirt and someone's like, is that you? And I was like, well, it's us, but yes, it is. I am one of the duo. Andy, I know we've said this before. What is super cool is when you find out in very, I think, organic ways, roundabout ways, that people in our community are engaging with the show.
Yeah.
They appreciate it. It's super humbling to just get the opportunity to share life, encourage people that are listening both here in our local community and beyond. So as you can always, we're podcast famous, but we're not real famous.
So just say hi.
We're local podcast famous, which is not famous at all. Just to be clear, let's just back up and say,
so just
not
come say hi.
But come say hi. Always love that. That's super fun. So.
Somebody, we did have somebody, our friend John Swanson, reach out after last week's show and put some feedback in.
He gave some meaning, as only John Swanson can do, gave some meaningful feedback. And so I might have feedback for his feedback, Andy.
So we're going to listen to that right now.
Let's see.
Sheesh, guys, I'm out walking, listening to your podcast about catching up. And I turned 65 this summer and have been in ministry jobs most of my life. Never figured out a financial plan. And I'm coming to the point of thinking, what if we're okay? What if, rather than everything we identify as bugs, all of the fear of not measuring up and all of the wondering whether we're doing it right and all of those kinds of things, what if those are actually just features? Those are what life looks like. I've just recently been thinking about troubles and thinking about how things can move from being acute to chronic to being life. So we love to rush to acute things, not cute things, but acute things. So like problems. When somebody has a problem in their life, we love to rush to solve it. When it becomes chronic, then we're like, oh man, are they still talking about that? And at some point we move to it being life. Life is those just wacky things. Life is those odd things. Life is whatever friends we have or don't have. I worry sometimes about how much our expectations then create our frustrations. And rather than working so hard to try to measure up to something, if we re-examined our expectations and realized that, oh, maybe it's okay to be okay. So I listened to the two of you, and Andy, you're in the middle of FAIR, because I've been watching that. It's like, yeah, you probably ought to be exhausted. Joel, you just switched from one career to another career. You probably ought to be exhausted. It's not that there's a problem. It's that that's what goes along with all of the delights of all of those things. So enough preaching. It was mostly nice walking with you, except for the realizing that really, really? Thanks. Love you guys. Bye.
Oh, John.
John, Dr. John Swanson. I mean, I think when we first got the email and I listened to that feedback, I was like, there was part of me, there was an inside of me that was a little bit of me that was probably, I would say, slightly defensive to that, maybe.
Interesting.
A little bit. Well, because I got thinking about it, I'm like, sometimes we like to be frustrated about our circumstance or like whatever's come to us. Like we could do a deep dive into the psyche of all of this, but it was just like, is it okay for me to be frustrated with where I'm at right now? Like when I feel like I'm not responding the way I ought to be responding. John's point is good though. Like, and I would say like, well, where does that sense of oughtness come from? Mm-hmm. You should be doing this or whatever. You know, we had mentioned kind of some of the financial stuff that my wife and I are trying to figure out. And yeah, I want to be very careful that I'm not measuring any of that against anybody else. At the same time, Andy, I would like to retire someday. I would like to not have to work for the rest of my life. And I think John would agree with this. I think John would agree. Like, certain intentionalities financially are appropriate, but his warning is an appropriate one to say, yeah, like what are you, is freaking out about this going to add anything to you, or the sense of like, oh, I should be doing this. In the coaching world, we say all the time, don't shit on yourself. Andy was ready for the bleep. I saw his hand was quickly going to the bleep button. He was worried, but no, yeah, there it is.
But we thank you, John, for putting in feedback.
Thanks, John.
We love it when you guys put in feedback. So you can either email feedback@dudesanddadspodcast or voicemail us at 574-213-8702.
We love those voicemails. And why do we love them? Because we can put them on the show as quality content to prove to everybody we have real life bodies that are listening to what we're talking about. Oh, thanks, John. Right back at you, my friend, by the way. We love you deeply. We're so grateful for you. Thank you for that. That was really meaningful. And it played around in my head for a little while. So,
well, tonight, Joel, we have a previous guest on with us.
You know that, you know how good a guest has to be to get back on this show. I mean, the narrow is the way and few be that find it, Andy.
but welcome back, Corey, to the show.
Hi, Corey.
Hello.
Oh, gosh. And not only that, not only is Corey with us, he's here with us in person.
Last time we made him sit in his shed, it was cold out and he had a heater on and
he was wearing flannel. I mean, he looked very, and his beard was longer.
His beard was way longer.
Yeah. Gosh, Corey, let's just quickly, I think first things first, most important things first, what's the beard journey been like? Where are you at in your, how does the beard work for you? Do you grow out so long, do a hard cut back and then start back at square one? Or are you, is there a happy medium that you're trying to find somewhere?
I start every year in October.
Okay.
And I shave it in May.
Okay. Gotcha. So
it's a winter summer thing.
Gotcha.
Okay.
Now, can I also ask, is this also the result of any negotiation whatsoever with your wife?
The summer months are when we work on rebuilding our marriage. from the winter months. She's not a huge fan.
Understood. Our wives have mixed feelings.
Mine likes my beard, but not when it's like super bushy. Because she can see it from the back. Like if she's walking behind me and she sees the beard.
If your beard has a profile, that's right. Where she draws the line.
Yeah.
So she does. She has a certain range.
Right. But when I shave it off completely, then it's no. Like that's not a good thing.
Well, for my wife, it's the color, I think, as much as anything. Because we can be out and about and people will think I'm her dad.
Oh. Guys, Joel literally spit the water out.
Oh, gosh. Well,
so she doesn't find it as humorous as Joel does.
No, because that's creepy. I get it. I understand. Shan, who was that elderly man walking with you the other? Oh, wow. No, that's funny. Okay. So, yeah, that's a general take on the beards. I've got a trim coming up here on Tuesday. So that'll be good. But yeah, my wife, same deal. I think we've talked about this before. She generally is kind of like, I don't know, whatever. But then when I go and shave it off, she has like immediate remorse about it. And I'm like, okay, you're only giving fire to every stereotypical male female conversation here about lack of clear boundary and direction and what you want. So anyway, so I think there's some happy medium that we're all trying to find in general. Right.
Yeah,
I think so.
Absolutely.
Great. Corey. Okay. So here's the deal. I think last time we talked, we got kind of the overview and we should.
Yeah. We'll link to the other episode,
the previous episode, because we kind of got the outline of jail ministry, like what you're involved in here in Elkhart County. I think it's helpful again, just for those that are new to the crew. General outline of what you do, what the ministry is about, and then I think the update stuff about kind of new adventures in jail ministry, if I can call it that.
Sure. Well, I've been at the jail for about 10 years now, and one of the things you learn quickly in this type of ministry is when you're in the jail, you know, maybe you're doing a Bible study or church service, those are all good. But when people leave the jail and they have no family, no friends, no place to live, no transportation, a lot of kids, maybe with different people, drug addictions, trauma, life is just really hard. And there's no amount of Bible memorization that will fix all of those problems. So you leave the jail and your life just hits you as soon as you walk through those doors and you know, all the things that happened inside, as good as they were, they stay on the inside. Cause now you're trying to figure out how to get back and find some place to live that evening.
Yeah.
Somewhat of a generalization, but that's mostly true for everybody who, you know, most people who leave incarceration, that's what they're walking out, into.
Yep. And all the bigger reason for which outlines the challenge of them not going back into that same thing when you are sort of resource depleted at that point, both financially and relationally, then like, what are you going to go to make your way in the world? Probably what you knew or what is familiar to you would be my guess.
That's right. Where else are you going to go?
Yeah.
Right.
The people who are incarcerated hear this all the time. You can't go back to the same people. You can't go back to the same places and you can't do the same things. Those are easy things to say. And then in the next breath, we also say, but don't come to my places and don't do my things and you're not going to be a part of my people.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So, I mean, if you and I had to walk out of this room and never go back to people that we knew or the places where we were raised or the things that we did, I mean, that'd be a difficult thing to do.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
And you know, a lot of it also is just, again, a generalization, but a lot of people who are in the Elkhart County Jail have been through a lot of trauma and abuse that they've just not had the opportunity to work through. And so you can't expect all of that trauma to be undone in a 6-month program or in a Bible study inside the Elkhart County Jail. So I think what we realized is, oh, the good news has to be more than just doing a Bible study in the jail. The good news has to be more than just when I die, I get to go to heaven. We think that people should be able to experience the kingdom of God before they die.
Dangerous ideas. Dangerous ideas.
So that's kind of our goal. There's this, you know, everybody knows the verse in James, can that faith without works is that, can that type of faith save you? But the type of faith he's talking about is somebody who sees somebody who's naked and hungry and says, go be well and be fed. And then he says, but they don't do anything to take care of their body. And so we're really trying to figure out how can we focus. And really the Gospels, the whole New Testament is so much more focused on bringing the kingdom of God to earth than us going to heaven when we die.
Yeah.
And so we're always trying to figure out what can we do to take care not just of people's souls, but also their bodies, so they can experience the kingdom of God here on earth. And a lot of us are going to live for a few more years at least. And we don't want, the good news is not you will have to experience hell on earth for the next 30 years until you die, and then you can go to heaven.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
We're just holding on around here. Just holding on for our last breath. Yeah. And then the good part starts. Yeah. So, In jail ministry specifically, like what is the on the ground experience as far as your ministry expressions, the things that you guys have been doing sort of historically, because I think you outlined a few of those, but like what does Elkhart County Jail Ministry look like past and present?
Well, the jail ministry has been around for maybe 40 years, I mean, 45 years. It started a while ago. Some churches in Goshen got together, formed a nonprofit organization, and put a chaplain in the jail in downtown Goshen when it was there. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, for a lot of years, it was Mike Kupke was a chaplain back then. He was a chaplain for the first 38 years of the jail ministry, wow. A fantastic guy. And there were maybe a dozen assistant chaplains who would go in, meet with inmates, distribute Bibles and literature, help with church services. So today things look a little bit different, and I would divide our ministry up into three different areas. We do what most churches would think of as ministry proper. So the Bible studies, the church services, the discipleship, baptisms, all of those things. But then we also do tattoo removal. So we offer free tattoo removal inside the jail and outside the jail. So anybody who's listening to this, if you live in Elkhart County, you can get your tattoos removed at Vista Community Health Center.
Okay.
It's for a suggested $10 donation.
Yeah.
And then we also do reentry housing. So we have 6 homes that we own on the north side of Goshen. And we have either 2 single women or 2 single men living in a home at any given time. We have a guy named Don French, who is our housing coach, and Chris Klesinski, who helps Don with the men and women who live in our homes. Because we've seen this to be true. If you don't have a stable place to live, your life will never be stable. Mm-hmm. It all starts with that.
Oh, yeah.
Education will never be stable. Healthcare will never be stable. Employment will never be stable. Church attendance will never be stable. Your family won't be stable. Now, we also learn it's not a guarantee of stability. But if you're always moving every 3 months, you're fearful of eviction, your rent is too high, you can't afford it, or you're forced to live someplace. You know, it's hard to complete the drug court program if you're sentenced to drug court if you're living in a drug house.
Yeah.
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 If you could believe that.
Real barrier.
It's a barrier.
Real barrier. Yeah.
Right. But that's the only place you have to go.
Yeah.
That's where you're going to go.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so, but I think everything that we do, housing, tattoo removal, all the stuff inside is really, we really are kind of honing in this idea of we want to provide people with a different kind of community that they feel like they belong to.
Yeah.
And we would call it the kingdom of God.
Yeah.
So the Bible studies are a way to help people experience that. Tattoo removal is a way to help people experience that. Housing is a way to help people experience that. as we're looking into the future, I think what we keep talking about, and let me back up. Here's how we kind of operate with the jail ministry. We bought a tattoo removal machine, laser, and then we didn't know what we were going to do with it. So we were like, well, now we need to learn how to use it and figure out where we're going to put it and figure out a process for it all. We bought our first house before we had any idea who was going to live in it. Mm. We had no model for it. We had no processes or procedures in place for it. But the next thing I think we're going to do is we want to open up some type of a community center in Elkhart County. Mm. Are you guys familiar with the Elkhart County Clubhouse?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. It is a fantastic organization phenomenal. In Elkhart County. There's one in, it started in Goshen.
The one I know about is in Goshen.
Right. Yep. Rich Meyer heads that. And there's one in Elkhart now.
Okay.
So that is a support community for people with mental illness. Mm. It's open 5 days a week, 8 to 5. It's a place for people who have any level of mental illness can go, and have a purposeful day and feel like they belong. They're supported. There's a reason for them to be there. They're needed. And we think there's enough people who are formerly incarcerated have unique enough hurdles and obstacles that we want to start some type of a community center, as a support community for people who have been formerly incarcerated. So just like tattoo removal and housing, we don't know how it's going to work or where it's going to be, but we've already hired the executive director to run it once it does start.
That's awesome.
Right now she's helping down with housing.
This is totally in line with your business model. I can see it's just how you guys operate.
Waited until we had it all figured out, we still wouldn't be doing anything.
Yeah. Yeah.
See, now I just want to hit the pause button here because I think, from the seat that I've been in, executive pastor role, and now CEO for another non-for-profit organization, I know, and I can almost hear the board members in the background saying, who are usually business minded people, or who usually the kind of people, I have a finance committee that's comprised of a couple CPAs and a business analyst for a large, Fortune 500 company. And they tend to be risk averse people, responsibly risk averse people, but they tend to be like, they're going to pump the brakes on things and make sure. And I value that. I value that insight. I value that caution. In faith-based non-for-profits specifically, I have really seen that sort of demeanor often in place. And I don't want to necessarily, and maybe you can correct me, I don't always want to chalk it up to fear per se, but there is maybe a sense of like, man, we want to be stewards with this resources and we want to make sure that we don't have egg on our face at any point in any wrong term, all I's dotted and T's crossed before we launch something, before we go into something. And yet the story that you have told, there have been very intentional things. And you guys as an organization, I know that you have all the things in place, but there's been, I have sensed a little bit less of a aversion to risk. So that's just my outside perspective. Yes. No. Am I right?
I think it can be fear, but I think another part of it is we set up these unreasonable definitions of what success looks like or what expectation is. Mm.
Thank you, Dr. John Swanson. Yes. Yeah.
I was disappointed because I thought it was going to be Ron Swanson. But when he said it,
yeah,
I'll get over it.
Yeah. And so John Swanson should have his own pyramid of success. The John Swanson pyramid of success. I'd put that up on my wall. Absolutely. But yeah. So expectations of what success looks like. Yeah.
And so we're very intentional. We think that our only obligation at the ministry is to provide people with opportunities and the resources for spiritual development, professional development, and personal development. And we don't measure our success based on whether people take advantage of those or not, because we just can't control that. Mm-hmm. But if our only responsibility is to provide those opportunities for people, it feels a little bit less like a risk.
Yeah.
That's how I look at it.
Right. Yeah.
Because now we're going to put all of this effort and time and money into this thing, not to change Joel's life or to fix Joel, but in order to provide him every opportunity he needs to grow in the ways that he wants to grow.
Mm-hmm. So it's really an elevation. What I hear you saying is it's an elevation of that person's individual accountability, the ability for them to hold themselves accountable to something better, to something greater.
Yeah. Well, I think once they experience a community that's supportive and is really willing and excited to invest in them with no strings attached, when people catch that, watch out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Really. And if they don't, we don't have to chalk that up as a loss or a failure, or we did something wrong. There's a balance between, we're always trying to figure out how we can do things better. But we just never want to judge ourselves based on whether or not Andy decided to, you know, take advantage of the financial planning classes that we offered, or whatever it might be, or he relapsed while he was in our home.
Right.
Well, right.
Right.
You know, I don't know how long it takes to undo possibly 20 or 30 years, you know, of living life a certain way.
Right. Right. And that's, you know, that's a great point. I was having a conversation with someone really close to me not too long ago about, we were talking about an individual who mutual friend or person we both knew, and talking about some decisions that they had made that were really, I mean, it's really unfortunate, we would see as not wise decisions, but this person, you know, had lived a fair amount of life. And my friend said to me, he's like, I'm just wondering, like, you know, can this be turned around? Can this change? And I said, well, first of all, I mean, God can do anything, right? Like, absolutely, God can do anything. But this person has been living the way that they have been living for decades.
It's not an overnight thing.
Yeah. They have all the reinforcement in the other direction. And and you just sitting down with them, surprise, surprise, for 30 minutes, trying to talk some sense into them or trying to offer them an alternative way. I wish you all the best, but there's a lot of reinforcement in the other direction.
Well, I think we also sometimes conflate, I think what we're unintentionally or maybe intentionally trying to do sometimes is to make people's lives look like our lives look, as if the way we're doing things is the right way to do things.
Yeah.
If somebody who's not following the Dave Ramsey Financial Peace University plan, right, they're doing things the wrong way. And we know that's the fifth gospel in the Bible.
100%. Andy, by the way, make sure we get a good sound clip of that, because I'd like to take it out of context and put it on me. Put it out there. No.
But not everybody handles money the same way I do.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And I'm just not. Now, in America, there might be a right way to do it, but in the kingdom of God, I'm just not sure those two things overlap as nicely as we'd like for them to, to look. And so sometimes we spend a lot of money, or not a money, we spend a lot of time, I think, maybe trying to look, measuring somebody's success based on, you know, the way that we think somebody should manage their money, or, you know, whether they should rent or buy. And some of this rubs me the wrong way, because I think sometimes we do equate how somebody manages their money with how spiritual they are.
100%.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's a very pietist Protestant problem. Yeah. You know, I didn't, for years and years, I never really thought about it. This phrase, the Protestant work ethic, like that kind of deep into our, you know, our history as a country, and what that work ethic was always rooted in was, I need to work really hard so that I can demonstrate that I'm saved. So like my productivity my salvation were
tied together.
Tied together. And I think that there's some weird unknown subconscious hangovers from that within our life.
Yeah.
At the same time, you would say for inmates that have come out of incarceration, you would say there are certain things, I don't know what language you use. There's certain things that we hope for them, certain maybe milestones, mile markers, things that would be realized for them. What does that look like?
Well, I've come to believe that everybody should be in therapy. Everybody.
Yeah.
All right.
People who have been incarcerated. Again, this is not 100%. But a lot just have experienced an unbelievable amount of trauma.
Yeah.
And one of my hopes for them is that they, so this is the jail ministry offers every single person in the Elkhart County Jail, everybody who lives in our home, everybody who gets out of jail, we tell them, if you find a therapist, it could be a family therapist, a marriage therapist, personal, it could be about anger or addictions. You find one that you like and go to it, and the jail ministry will pay for every session for however long you need to go for however many sessions you need to go.
Wow. That's awesome.
Wow.
We believe it so strongly.
Wow. Okay.
That people have so much stuff that they have to work through.
Yeah.
And we want people to be the best versions of themselves. And I think the only way to get to that point, is you have to work through a lot of this stuff that you have either pushed down or dealt with inappropriately, or you haven't dealt with at all. One of my good friends who I go to church with has a t-shirt that says, people need Jesus, ..
and a therapist.
And a therapist.
Yes. Yes.
We're really strong believers in that.
Yeah.
And so I would hope, I mean, I think, you know, reconciling with parents, reconciling with children, reconciling with spouses, you can't do that unless you are healed and whole yourself. Mm-hmm. I think it all starts with that. But I think that that'd be my hope for people, is that they're able to work through forgiveness issues, anger issues, and that they would be able to start, because I think that's part of what the good news is. It's not just we get to die and go to heaven. It's through the death and resurrection of Jesus. He is reconciling the entire world.
Yes.
All of
yes.
the relationships.
Yeah.
There's a great book. It's called The Very Good Gospel by Lisa Sharon Harper. We did it in book club one time in the jail. And she said one of the things that isn't quite picked up in English translations of the Hebrew Bible and Genesis is when God declared it is very good, it's implied that the relationship between those things are also very good.
Mm-hmm.
So the relationships between animals and the earth, and humans and animals, and men and women, all these things, the relationship is good. The connection is good. And sin broke all of those things.
Yeah.
And so part of the restoration and the reconciliation and the healing that the Holy Spirit is doing is to make all those relationships right.
That's early Genesis. And this is the moment where I do a random Hebrew callback from years ago in graduate school. But I mean, some of the strongest words, it's this tov ma'od, which is this good, very good thing. Some of the strongest words, I would agree the way it's structured in the Bible, it pops off the page to you that there is something very, very significant relationally about what's being described there. And that's all. Hey, bonus Bible lesson today on the podcast, guys. We're hitting all of the bullet points and more. So good. So yeah, Corey, I'm with you. And I think, it just makes a ton of sense. I am also blown away by the degree and the length that you guys will take to make sure, and support that's happening. That's amazing to me.
Well, I think what you said earlier is key there. Like you're not measuring your success by how many people completed your program or whatever. It's more of our success is we felt the need to do this thing and we did it.
Yeah.
Like there's not a financial thing. There's not a number thing to it. It's just, we did it. We followed through with what we felt God calling us to do. That's success.
And it's the right thing to do regardless of whether or not people take advantage of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's the right thing to do, even though so-and-so may have relapsed in one of our homes.
Right.
Or tattoo removal is the right thing to do. Even if somebody goes off to prison, relapses, gets more tattoos, and then comes back, it was still the right thing to do.
Yeah. And we've sort of, you've mentioned the tattoo thing, and I wonder, just for specificity's sake, because some people might wonder, it's like, what's the deal with removing tattoos? The gist here, and maybe there's more, is that there, tattoos can be a barrier. So one of them can be a barrier to employment.
Yeah.
And then there are other reasons, maybe goes beyond that. What is the general, for the general person going in for tattoo removal, what are their reasons? What are they hoping to accomplish?
Yeah. Tattoos are becoming more acceptable. Not the kind of tattoos that we're removing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Still not acceptable.
It's still not acceptable. No. people come in for all sorts of reasons. They have gang tattoos, you know, dirty white boy tattooed somewhere mm-hmm. on their body, and they want to get out of the gang. Mm-hmm. And it's really hard to get out of an organization if you're tagged with their logo or symbol somewhere on your body. So they want to, it's a step they're taking to remove themselves from that lifestyle. Or it's racist tattoos. Mm-hmm. One of the first people we ever treated, his whole back was covered in a swastika. Mm-hmm. And his grandchild was biracial.
Oh,
wow.
And so, of course, you don't want your biracial granddaughter growing up with a grandpa who has a swastika on his back.
Fair enough. Yeah. Yes.
Or they're embarrassed because when they get out, their kids don't want them to go to their school events because their tattoos are all over their face. Yeah. Or just it's triggering and traumatic for them to see, you know, something on their face that they did during the worst, lowest point of their life. Mm-hmm. It's hard to move forward in life when the worst parts of your past are tattooed all over your face.
Right.
And so it's gang stuff. It's, you know, we're tired of this life. We don't want that to be a part of who we are. We don't people to judge us when they look at us.
Gotcha.
Part of it is employment. You can get a job pretty much with any type of tattoo, but the types of jobs that are going to be open to you are going to be fairly limiting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, if you have the F word tattooed up near neck, I'm just going to assume that maybe not as many doors would be open for you.
Right.
Andy.
No, wait. I have lots of tattoos, but not that.
None of that.
But I will tell you, people who have those really kind of harsh tattoos are some of the nicest people you'll ever meet.
Yeah, I'm sure.
We did a video for our banquet this year, and one of the guys is just covered in tattoos. And his admonition or his challenge to people in the video is, if you see somebody like me on the street, come up and talk to me because I may not be what you think.
Yeah. Mm, yeah.
But you know, it's hard to get past that initial,
right.
You're going to make assumptions about somebody.
Sure. Yeah. And, you know, I think from an employer's perspective, an employer's like, man, I had a really great interview with them or had a great experience, but they're going to be interfacing with customers and things like that. And like a number of things just realistically go through your brain. So it is a super, I mean, it's one of the most practical, you want to talk about practical ministry and like really making new avenues available to a person or reavailable to a person. I think it's super cool. And the stories that have come out of it, I think I've heard some of them, but they're pretty amazing.
It's fantastic. And so Holly Fry does our, Holly Young does our tattoo removal for us. And so when we're in tattoo removal, it's just the two of us and whoever is getting tattoo removed. So they're out of the ward, you know, it's kind of, they can let their guard down. We have, again, it's not about the tattoo removal. That's a good thing in and of itself. But what it really is, it gives us an opportunity to have just a real conversation. Yeah. With somebody where they can talk freely. They don't have to be guarded with what they're sharing with us. Mm-hmm. They're out of the war. They're not with 40 other guys or 40 other women. And it's just a time for them to relax a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's really amazing.
We have, so the manufacturer of our laser comes out twice a year to realign the laser and kind of do some maintenance and upkeep on the machine. And they always count the pulses that we do. So this laser pulses 10 times per second. And when the laser hits the ink of the tattoo, the ink absorbs that light energy and the top layer of ink vaporizes kind of underneath your skin with a loud pop. So it sounds like a taser, 10 pops, loud pops every, 10 per second. It's really painful. But the manufacturer of the machine said, on average, most people who are doing tattoo removal, they have 500,000 pulses a year. You're doing pretty good if you have 500,000. And we're up over 1 million a year.
Oh, wow.
On
wow.
average, we're doing a lot of tattoo removal procedures.
That's amazing.
That's awesome.
That's super cool.
And that's just in the jail. That doesn't count the machine at Vista.
Wow. So as you guys are kind of pressing forward with this community center idea, one of the things that struck, I guess it's in the back of my mind, because we're, in talking about all the positive things, and I wonder what the experience is like for you and your staff, because not every story is a happy ending, or and not everybody, I know with other recovery ministries that I'm I have connections with. I mean, the recidivism rate is, especially when it's addiction related, the recidivism rate is super, super high. Some people have to go through a program 2-3 times before they kind of make it out and stay out. And just in clear terms, they have to stay alive long enough to also be able to do that. What is your guys's, I guess, like, because I've heard you talk about, and maybe that makes sense in this way, when you talk about success, when you talk about what the ministry's kind of where you get, where the hope is in that ministry, how do you guys process together when it doesn't go the way that you had hoped and that you had, and I know that you had prayed for, and then, because the one thing about this ministry, and there's a ton of prayer behind it. There's a ton of very intentional, spiritual focus on what you all are doing. Some of my favorite people, some of my favorite faith leaders, in this community are part of the jail ministry. And so, how do you guys process that part of it to get together, or and maybe even individually?
Yeah. Well, first part of it is setting up correct expectations. Mm-hmm. So I'm always surprised the recidivism rate isn't 100%.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't understand. Once you're in the system, I don't understand how anybody
can make it out.
Can make it out.
Yeah.
Right. So I'm encouraged. I mean, so it takes one person.
Yeah.
For me to see, stay out and do well. I get excited about that.
Yeah.
But the other thing is once you kind of drop this kind of this pretense that we actually have the power to change somebody's life. Mm. And if I only used strong enough arguments, if I only spent one more hour with them or did one more Bible study with them, or, you know, once we realize we just have so little power over what somebody chooses to do, and we trust that God is ultimately in control, then nothing that we do, we can have the confidence that nothing we do is ever really wasted. Mm. I think we're trying to be okay with the fact that some seeds that are planted today might sprout 40 years down the road, and I will not be around to see them. Mm-hmm. And that's okay.
Yeah.
You just have to trust that what you're doing now is planting seeds.
It's planting seeds, and it's the right thing to do, and it's the good thing to do, even if I don't see any of the fruits, or if I don't see any behavioral changes. I have to trust that God is still working in that person's life. But burnout and frustration, it's only a matter of time if you think, okay, my job is not just to provide housing, but I need to make sure this person does not relapse. Mm. And I need to make sure this person says the right prayer before he or she dies, or it's on me.
Yeah.
We may not always think that explicitly, but I think that sometimes
we kind of do.
I think we just have an inflated sense of how important we are.
Yeah.
And we forget that God's working behind the scenes. You know, God loves Joel as much as anybody else does. And the other thing is, God may be working on something inside Joel that I don't even know about. In the meantime, I'm so focused on this behavior over here of Joel's that I think is the most important thing. I'm getting so frustrated because Joel won't stop doing this thing. And meanwhile, God is focused on something totally different that I'm not even aware of.
Yeah. 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 I think, you know, years ago, probably the first, my first encounter with it, you know, Dallas Willard always talked about, you know, the kind of the myth of behavior modification and the, what he called the gospel of sin management.
Yeah.
And I think that it's always like there's this, especially within our kind of our bigger evangelical tent there, you know, there is this, myth, I'll call it a myth. Yeah. That really what the gospel is about is just kind of us managing bad behavior, doing more better behavior and less not better behavior, to put it syntactically in a completely terrible way. But that's essentially what we're hoping for. Like that's the goal, and this real focus on behaviorism. it trickles all the way down. You can see it even within, you know, how in boy, without this, I mean, I'm not even sure if we'd have content for a show, like how parents, like, and even in parenting, like, if I just get my kid to behave XYZ way. I mean, we've all had that thought. Like, then I would, number one, I would be affirmed in my Christian parenting, which is the most important thing. Most important thing. So that when we get together with friends, we can talk about, you know, like how great I'm doing at this. We just have a list of behaviors that we're trying to suppress and a list of behaviors that we're trying to elevate. Yeah. And then if that's the case, then those are kind of our gatekeepers and our, you know, how we're measuring.
Yeah. I think it's hard. Once you start measuring your success based on other people's behavior, it's impossible not to start manipulating somebody to now, get the behaviors you want.
Now there, that'll, okay.
That'll preach.
That's my next sermon for Joel.
I don't know if that's true or not, but it seems like that's one of the reasons we don't. Cause I can manipulate, you know, somebody in any specific way to get a specific behavior that I could, you know, tout at our banquet.
Yeah.
To say, see, this is working. Here's, you know, this person saved up for an emergency fund.
Yeah. Another Dave Ramsey poke. Ding, ding. we should have like a voiceover, like, take that, Dave Ramsey. Bing. Yeah. And my goodness, let's just be really clear. I'm going to run off the emergency fund real quick anyway, just to say the vast majority of Americans that have never been incarcerated are not held to those standards.
Right.
You know,
that's true.
Like we and I think there is this tension, and I know that I know that I have subscribed to these things when I'm probably under a particular stress, or just want to see results. I want to see results and know that we're making headway. But that so much of the work that we do, number one, the work that we do as followers of Jesus is unseen work. Mm-hmm. And that's why it looks absolutely, I mean, if you're going to take worldly standards to that, it looks absolutely bizarre and nonsensical and foolish at times.
Yeah.
And I can just hear, I mean, a CEO of a Fortune 500 company listening to you, what you guys are doing and being like, you know, like could look at that sideways because it's like, no, like how can you improve anything if you're not measuring, you know, X, Y, Z. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, you're doing the work of souls, of care for souls.
That's a completely different measurement than any
if you want to call it that. And it's this messy work that feels a little bit like nailing jello to the wall at a time. Tell me if this sticks with you, Corey. I'm wondering, so many times I've heard people much wiser than me basically say, are the people that I'm walking alongside, are they moving toward Jesus or are they moving away from him? And that is the barometer by which I want to operate. I want to run my organization. I want to run my own life and how I'm discipling. Would you kind of resonate with that?
I think so. I would say, are the people who we have a relationship with exhibiting more fruits of the Spirit? Mm.
Yeah.
Because I mean, we have people in our homes right now who would not identify as Christians.
Sure.
And you hear the experience they've had in life in a church and you can understand, I understand why that person would be hesitant to go to church or call themselves a Christian.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I can see, I'm thinking of somebody specifically who is patient and kind and forgiving and encouraging. And you just know, okay, he's getting it. And I'm not going to try and force something, you know, down his throat right now, but you can just tell the Holy Spirit is working. And our job is to continue to be a safe place for him to ask questions, to talk about his experiences, his ideas, and we can talk about ours. Because the other thing is, I hope I'm displaying more of the fruits of the Spirit as a result of the jail. Yeah. That's the thing about jail ministry. It's more of a ministry to the church than it is the people who are incarcerated in the Elkhart County Jail.
You just wonder if Jesus maybe knew that, like with his because I've been thinking about, I know the whole like visit people in jail gets thrown out a lot. And it's kind of like, oh, this is a thing you as a Christian should be doing. But there's this really interesting phenomenon of exactly in the reverse of like, who's actually being ministered to.
Right. I tell every group that I talk to the extent that the formerly incarcerated are not actively participating in our churches, it's to our detriment more than it is to their detriment.
Yep. Yeah.
I firmly believe that.
I hope faith leaders hear that. That I think that's the one thing that I would say. I know in the previous ministry that I was a part of, some of the men coming out of, they would frequently were part of our congregation or would frequently come and share in our congregation. It was like the absolute highlight for so many people. Because what it did is it really put a mirror on them. Reprioritizes everything that you think you're worried about in your whatever.
Yep.
When you hear a completely different perspective of like, hey, I'm just working to stay clean this month. Mm-hmm. I'm just working to repair this relationship with my daughter because I was absent because I was so strung out or whatever for this long. And you're like, huh? Yeah. Okay. That's maybe the things that I'm griping about to God right now, I need to like recalibrate.
And maybe this person has a lot to teach me about grace and forgiveness 100%. And persistence and all these things. We had a guy share his testimony this morning. He preached today at our church. He's currently at work release. It is the same thing. You hear a story and you're thinking, oh man, you've lived through more than I will ever live with. Mm-hmm. Or live through. Mm-hmm. And we have a lot to learn from our incarcerated brothers and sisters. And if we think that it's just our job to go in and minister to them, we're getting it backwards.
Yeah. Yeah. That's really amazing. Well, Corey, I guess number one, we always want to make sure this is available. If people are interested in getting connected with yourself in the ministry, where should they go? Where should we send them?
You can find us on Instagram, Facebook, and our website. So if you just Google Elkhart County Jail Ministry, you'll find everything.
Awesome.
Bingo. Well, that'll be in the show notes for sure. We'll be able to send people there. And what kind of, I just a quick overview, if people want to get connected with the jail ministry and they're like, hey, I got like a lot in life, but I feel like maybe I might have something to offer or be able to participate in general, like what are the opportunities if people want to plug in?
We have some opportunities inside. So COVID, last time we talked was during COVID. Mm-hmm. Everything was shut down.
Yeah.
And we're slowly building up from COVID. So there are now opportunities to get involved inside the Elkhart County Jail. So I do a book club and I teach an Inside Out Dad's class. You guys, you should do a podcast.
Oh, here we go.
From the jail.
Okay. Yes.
With our Inside Out
Dad's group. Let's do it. Let's do it. Right here, right now.
All right, let's do it.
That would be fantastic.
Let's do it.
That's a brilliant idea. I love that. Yeah. That's so great. So
they can join me for a book club. They can come to our Inside Out Dad's class. We have different things throughout the day, throughout the month. So we had an Amish choir come in.
Yes.
Wow. And they sang two hymns in each war. They just kind of went around and did some, did a hymn sing.
Yeah.
We do painting classes. And so our assistant chaplains and our volunteers are able to participate in some of those activities. We're always looking for churches and volunteers to get involved in our housing. Mm-hmm. Okay. So once a month, all of our tenants get together and we have pizza. We have a topic that we talk about. It's just a way to get, to build a community.
Yep.
And so we met today. We have a group from 8th Street Mennonite attends, a group from River Oaks attends. So we're always looking for people to get involved because we want the people who live in our homes to have a good experience with people who call themselves Christians.
Yeah.
Because they've not always had a great experience.
Fair enough.
And we want our churches to get involved so they get to know some of the people because, again, I think it's more of a ministry to them and we can learn more about God through them than maybe they can through us. But also specifically, if there are people out there who want to be part of like a home, like a home repair ministry team, we have a couple of them, but every now and then our houses need a new roof, or they need a new porch or a new toilet. And that's a great way for people to get involved also. Our reentry.
Fantastic. Gosh. Great episode that also fostered what will inevitably be a future episode.
Yes.
I'm very, very excited about that. And I think, Corey, just on a personal note, I mean, I'll just say I'm super grateful for what you're doing. Super grateful to call you a friend. Thanks for being here. I feel like I learned some really significant things. I have this whole like sort of spiritual intake when we have these conversations. It's like, gosh, I need to reconsider some things. Some things I need to think about. So, thanks to you and all the great people that are part of the jail ministry. The number of stories just as a pastor in the community for 17 years, the stories that I have heard come out of it exactly on the other side of people that have their lives that they volunteered, what the transformation that has brought to them, man, really, really some really, really significant things. So very, very cool.
Well, I'll say the jail ministry has been so successful the past 40 years because Elkhart County is just so incredibly supportive.
Yeah.
Yes. It's unbelievable. Yeah. It's humbling. It's unbelievable.
Across multiple denominational lines.
So if there's a denomination in Elkhart County, they're involved in the jail ministry.
That's awesome. Yep.
Mennonites and all flavor of Mennonites and former Mennonites.
Yes.
And missionary and Baptist and Lutheran and Catholic. And I mean, you name it.
Yeah.
So that's the other thing about the jail ministry. Why I think it's more a ministry than a church, because when you volunteer at the ministry, you realize, oh, we're all playing for the same team.
There
might be significant. There are significant differences between denominations that need to be, considered. But when you boil it down and you're working inside the jail, what you realize quickly is, man, if we can just all focus and agree that Jesus is Lord.
Yeah.
And that's who we're trying to follow. Yeah. Even a Baptist and a Mennonite can get along. Yeah.
What? Say what? Oh, that's awesome. Well, again, Corey, thanks for hanging out with us tonight,
thanks,
man.
Thanks for having me back on.
So, so great. And just, man, brings a lot of joy to my heart. But as always, before we let you go.
And now it's time for the Dudes and Dads Pop Quiz.
Thank you, Aaron James.
No, that's Reagan.
I'm sorry, what?
That was a new one. Listen.
And now it's time for the Dudes and Dads Pop Quiz.
That is Reagan. Reagan, I'm sorry.
It's an updated
one. I'm sorry, Reagan. I was unprepared. I was like, who is this more mature voice that I hear on the line? Nicely done.
Yes. So this is the time that we just ask Corey random questions that have nothing to do with jail ministry.
Mostly. He can't prepare for it. He doesn't know what's coming next. And neither do we. So here we go.
I got to
come up. You're number one.
What are you currently curious about?
Oh, there we go. What are you currently curious about, Corey?
Oh, interesting.
It's like, am I curious about it?
I feel like I'm curious about a lot. I'm trying to narrow it down about the thing that I've been the most curious about lately.
Nice.
Does it have to be like profound or philosophical?
No.
We prefer
less profound, actually. something that's like, oh no, that makes sense. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'm really curious about astrophotography.
Astrophotography.
Yeah. I'm a photographer.
Yes.
And so I've been interested lately in shooting
pictures of the Houston skies. Astros. I get it. Astrophotography.
Close.
So close. I had to turn it.
That was anticlimactic.
Yeah. Well,
ending to the
podcast. Astrophotography. Fantastic. Corey, my question is, out of all of your family members, who lives the longest in the zombie apocalypse?
Silas. My youngest.
Okay.
Oh, by far.
And why does Silas make it the longest?
He's an inventor and a tinkerer and creative. Mm-hmm. And if there's somebody who can figure out a way.
Gotcha.
To build some type of contraption.
Yes, that will.
To keep himself safe or to kill everything around him. It would
bingo,
be him.
Bingo. Silas, way to go.
I'm guessing those are the two most important things in a zombie apocalypse.
I think so.
Yeah, it's
a safe room.
A safe room and dead zombies. That's really what it boils down to.
What's your favorite gadget?
Probably my. I think we talked about this last time. I like watches.
Yes.
And so my favorite gadget are my mechanical watches.
Yes. How many watches do you possess?
Roughly? You know, I was just being made fun of this today.
So great. Glad we can offer another opportunity.
I think I'm just shy of 20, I think.
Look, he's got two on right now.
Yeah, I always wear two. You know that.
Always has two, which is
normal.
It's normal.
Thank you.
Logical and normal, depending on what's going on. Okay. Next question. What book should we all be reading right now?
Oh, that's good. Okay. I just finished. There's a couple I need to choose from.
Mm.
We just finished one in book club, and it's called This Here Flesh by Cole Arthur Riley.
And again, any author with three names like that, it's worth a read.
You know, Cole Arthur Riley. Be good.
His parents knew what they were doing. This here.
Flesh.
What's so great about the book?
Her writing style is absolutely beautiful.
Love it.
It's been one of the favorite books we've done in book club.
Wow.
Okay. This here flesh. All right.
My last question. Who would play you in a movie?
Oh, I've got some requests, I think.
Bob Odenkirk.
Yes. No, that is spot on. And it was what I was thinking.
He's my favorite actor.
That is perfect. He's one of my favorite, honestly.
Yeah, he's a great actor.
He's fantastic. Yep.
You know, it's a good one. Joel thinks of the same person.
Oh my gosh. I just like that. The joy that came up within my heart. Oh, so good. No, it tracks every bit of it. And Bob Odenkirk would wear two watches. That would be like, it would be spot on.
I think he would.
Oh my gosh. So good. My final question is, if given the opportunity to like right now you were told you get to take a three day vacation mm-hmm. to any spot that you can drive to, where are you headed?
Oh, interesting. It'd be a haul.
Mm-hmm.
I'm gonna change my mind.
Okay.
Seattle,
okay. Washington.
I've never been there, but I think I was born to live there. I want to go to Seattle.
Fair enough. Okay.
Seattle, it is.
Seattle, I think Washington. I would love it there.
Okay. That's where he's headed.
Corey, you've successfully passed our pop quiz.
Way to go, Corey. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Yes. No one's failed yet, but there's been a few we've wondered about. Well, hey, again, Corey, thanks for hanging out with us. Appreciate it so much.
Thank you.
Guys, as always, you can head over to dudesanddadspodcast.com. And check out all the show notes. We'll have great show notes on this one and past episodes as well.
And we'll link to Corey's past episode too.
We will. So make sure you check that out. Also, dudesanddadspodcast@gmail.com. If you want to send us any helpful or unhelpful emails, we'll take either. We're not picky.
And if you want to be like Jordan and Krista and say hi to us, come find us somewhere.
Yeah, Jordan and Krista, keep up the good work. Spread the good word. Appreciate it all. Hey, guys, thanks for joining us. And until next time, we wish you grace
and peace.